Gnade gebe.
Ja.
Ich mache die Gedanken, mein Gehofer, die Kiege. Der Lehrer ist das Gepackische Dran, das war Schnee, 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 Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Adaita Gadadha Shri Vashadha Shri Shri Gauru Bhakta Kinda Ki Jai Navadvip Mayapur Dhamma Ki Jai Mathura Vrindavan Dhamma Ki Jai Jagannath Puri Dhamma Ki Jai Harinam Mahamantra Ki Jai Jai Gauru Premanande
Hari
My sincere apologies, there was some traffic on the way here, so delayed by a few minutes.
That's good.
Did you start with Jairanamal? Did you see him already?
It's already going to be made, otherwise. We want to hear from him.
Okay. This goes, we're studying from Srimad Bhagavatam, 3rd canto, 7th chapter, text 11. Vidura-maitreya samvada yatha jale chandramasah
kampadistat krito guna
drishyate sannapi drashtu atmano natmano gunah Yathā jale chandramāsah kampādistat krito guṇah
driśyate sa napi draṣṭuh
ātmano nātmano guṇah yathā jale chandramāsah
kampādistat krito guṇah
driśyate sa napi draṣṭuh Yatha,
as
jale, In the water.
In the water.
Chandramasaha.
Chandramasaha.
Of the moon.
Of the moon.
Kampadi.
Kampadi.
Quivering, etc.
Quivering, etc.
Tatkritaha.
Done by the water.
Gunaha.
Quality.
Drishyate.
Drishyate.
It is so seen.
It is so seen.
Asan api.
Asan api.
Without existence.
Without existence.
Drashtuhu.
Drashtuhu.
Of the seer.
Of the seer.
Atmanaha.
Atmanaha.
Of the self.
Of the self.
Anatmanaha.
Atmanaha.
Of other than the self.
Of other than the self.
Gunaha.
Gunaha.
Quality.
Quality.
Translation. As the moon reflected on water appears to the seer to tremble due to being associated with the quality of the water, so the self associated with matter appears to be qualified as matter. Purport. The Supreme Soul, the personality of Godhead, is compared to the moon in the sky, and the living entities are compared to the reflection of the moon on water. The moon in the sky is fixed and does not appear to quiver like the moon on the water. Actually, like the original moon in the sky, the moon reflected on the water should not also quiver, but because of being associated with water, the reflection appears to be quivering. Although in actual life, the moon is fixed. The water moves, but the moon does not move. Similarly, the living entities appear to be tainted by material qualities like illusion, lamentation, and miseries, although in the pure soul, such qualities are completely absent. The word pratiyate, which means apparently and not actually, like the experience of having one's head cut off in a dream, is significant here. The reflection of the moon on the water is the separated rays of the moon and not the actual moon. The separated parts and parcels of the Lord entangled in the water of material existence have the quivering quality, whereas the Lord is like the actual moon in the sky, which is not at all in touch with water. The light of the sun and moon reflected on matter makes the matter bright and praiseworthy. The living symptoms are compared to the light of the sun and the moon illuminating material manifestations like trees and mountains. The reflection of the sun or moon is accepted as the real sun or moon by less intelligent men, and the pure monistic philosophy develops from these ideas. In fact, the light of the sun and the moon are actually different from the sun and the moon themselves, although they are always connected. The light of the moon spread through the sky appears to be impersonal, but the moon planet, as it is personal, and the living entities on the moon planet are also personal. In the rays of the moon, different material entities appear to be comparatively more or less important. The light of the moon on the Taj Mahal appears to be more beautiful than the same light in the wilderness. Although the light of the moon is the same everywhere, due to being differently appreciated, it appears differently. Similarly, the light of the Lord is equally distributed everywhere, but due to being differently received, it appears to be different. One should not, therefore, accept the reflection of the moon on the water as actual and misunderstand the whole situation through monistic philosophy. The quivering quality of the moon is also variable. When the water is standing still, there is no quivering. A more settled conditioned soul quivers less, but due to material connection, the quivering quality is more or less present everywhere. His Divine Grace, Sri Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada Ki Jai. So what Srila Prabhupada explains is very apparent. It needs no further clarification, but I will attempt to elaborate it in light of today's auspicious festivals. Sri Balaram Rasa Yatra, Krishna's Vasanta, spring Rasa Yatra, the appearance of Vamshivadan Thakur, the appearance day of Shyamananda Pandit. And I did not notice it, but I thought today is also the appearance day of Lord Hanuman, Hanuman Jayanti. I just checked on the calendar, it says 23rd April. Huh? So, I will start with the last and then use the ideas Srila Prabhupada has given in this purport to reflect on these great personalities, these great souls. The Upanishads explain that the Lord is like a great cosmic fire and we are sparks of that fire, which is both same and different at the same time. And as Srila Prabhupada explains, when water is standing still, there is no quivering. So a person in this world who has been able to steady their mind, their intelligence and their identity does not necessarily experience the upheavals of the material world. But it is the nature of water to quiver. And therefore, just as wind hits the surface of water, immediately it starts quivering. And then whatever you see in that water immediately appears to be quivering with the water. Lord Hanuman is an ideal devotee, and therefore, once he is established in the consciousness of Lord Ram, Ram consciousness, and later in the Mahabharata, Krishna consciousness, because Lord Hanuman appeared on the flag of Arjuna in the middle of the Mahabharata battle, then he is able to jump across oceans and carry mountains on his shoulders. And the Sri Vaishnava Acharyas explain that Sita Devi is like a living entity that has somehow been captured. You know, in Ramayana, Sita Devi got captured by Marichi, the demon who pretended to be a golden deer. Right? And that represents illusion. And Hanuman is the ideal guru who will cross oceans and carry mountains on behalf of the Lord to be able to bring or reunite Sita Devi with Sri Ram. Similarly, the ideal guru is somebody who will cross oceans. Can we think of somebody who crossed oceans to unite living entities with the Lord? So he's an ideal servant. Because otherwise, living entities in the material world, you know, small thing happens, wind hits the water, they immediately start. And it is said that such great souls do not expect anything except for the service of the Lord. Like in Srimad Bhagavatam, 7th canto, somebody asked Prahlad Maharaj, where is your Vishnu? And he said, in a pillar. Everywhere. In you, in me, and Hiranyakashipu went and smashed the pillars, right? And Narasimha Chaturdasi is coming up soon. Similarly, it is said that somebody asked Hanumanji, you keep thinking, you know, you keep saying Ram, 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 where is your Ram? It is said Hanumanji ripped open his own chest and say, you see Ram there? And you could witness Sita, Ram and Lakshman in the heart of Sri Hanuman. There is another story where Sita Devi gave Lord Hanuman, after Lord Ramchandra came back to Ayodhya, Ram Darbar happened, everybody was happy, celebrating. And Sita Devi gave Hanuman the most precious pearl necklace. And you know what Hanuman did? Took it. And he took a pearl and put it in his mouth. And Sita Devi is thinking, once a monkey, always a monkey. You know, but she is very respectful towards Lord Ram's greatest servant. You know, there were others too. There was Sugriva, there was Vibhishana, there is Bharat, there is Shatrughna. But when we see Ram Darbar, we see Sita, Ram, Lakshman and Hanuman. The only person there who is not family is Hanuman. Right? And so after some time she asked Hanumanji, why are you doing this? He said, I can't see Lord Ram, I can't taste Lord Ram, I can smell Lord Ram. What's the point of this precious necklace? It's as good as spit. So the devotee of the Lord, the ideal devotee of the Lord like Hanumanji is like that. And there are many, many leelas of Lord Hanuman, but we cannot get into all of that. The second great personality we are talking about today is Shyamananda Pandit. His leelas are infinite, and it is said the pastimes of the devotees of the Lord are as infinite as the pastimes of the Lord, because the Lord is always interacting with his devotees and new pastimes are getting formed. But very briefly, one of the things that happened, one of the quiverings that happened among Vaishnavas is that when we live in a society of Vaishnavas, there is inevitably some misunderstanding here and there. Right? We say something, somebody thinks about it in a different way, and they go and tell their friend that this happened, and then a friend goes and tell the other friend this happened, and by the time you have finished a game of telephones, your original intention is lost. A similar situation arose in the life of Shyamananda Goswami. In Bengal, he was initiated by Hridaya Chaitanya Guptash. But then he went to study with Jiva Goswami in Vrindavan. And all of you know the story that, you know, in his eternal form he was Kanaka Manjari, and he got personally initiated by Srimati Radharani into the leelas of Sri Sri Radha Govinda. And Sri Radharani's anklet, it left a mark on his forehead. So the devotees who are followers of Sri Shyamananda wear a tilak which is slightly different from the ordinary tilak. And that led to a great misunderstanding that, you know, this guy is a separatist. But when the senior Vaishnavas intervened and explained that at the end of the day he sheltered, and Srimati Radharani personally came, that misunderstanding was quelled. The third example that we have today of a great acharya is Vamshivadan Thakur. And even today the descendants of Vamshivadan Thakur are still alive. And when I was doing my work in collecting various Vaishnava manuscripts, I went to one of their homes in Navadvip. And the latest descendant has a manuscript of the Srimad Bhagavatam in their home, and he showed it to me, and he said, in our family tradition I have heard that Gadadhar Pandit copied this manuscript and Mahaprabhu wrote margin notes. And so that Bhagavatam is still worshipped. It was left with Sri Vishnupriya Devi. And after Mahaprabhu took sannyas, Vamshivadhan Thakur was practically a household servant and child of Vishnupriya Devi. He is said to be the incarnation of the flute of Sri Krishna. And there is a very deep significance to the imagery of the flute. You know, at the end of the day, the flute is empty. Right? It is just a reed with six holes. And there is one hole where you blow, look at Sri Krishna. There is one hole you blow the air, and the other holes you play with your fingers and you can make mellifluous music. And it is said that, you know, any flute you look at, it'll have six holes. By itself, the flute doesn't do much. You know, it's very difficult to play it. But when it is in the hands of an expert, the holes in that flute become like our five senses and our mind, the six holes. You know, a flute cannot play itself. Similarly, a living entity in this world cannot do much by himself or herself. But in the hands of the Supreme Lord, when we dedicate our senses and our mind, those become like the six holes of the flute. And sometimes Krishna will deny us a particular sense that we are trying to gratify. And sometimes Krishna will mess with our minds. But as he plays through the flute, through disappointments and through good times, he will start creating music. Only if we are able to dedicate our senses and our mind to the Lord. And that is the deep significance of the flute. We must try to become like the servants of Vamshivadhan Thakur, who was totally dedicated to the service of Sri Vishnupriya Devi. In terms of the larger philosophical essence of this purport, there are other examples in Shastra which says that if there are 1,000 pots filled with water, you will be able to see the same moon in these different pots. Are these moons different? No, the same moon. Is the moon in the pot? No, the moon is up there. Is the moon that small as it looks on the pot? No. It is the nature of our vision that sees the moon like that. Similarly, you know, essentially our body is, if you think about it, just look around, the surface of this planet is 70% fluid and 30% solid, right? Is it the exact same ratio in our body? 70% fluid and 30% solids. That's the ratio of solid to fluid in our body. So why is it that we have the exact same ratio? Do you think it's a coincidence? Our shastras explain that there are three kinds of energies in existence. Chit, conscious energy, achit, unconscious energy, and Ishvara, creator of both. The body is achit energy, material energy, and somehow conscious energy takes it and expresses itself. And that is also the logic behind what Srila Prabhupada says here, that the light of the moon spread throughout the sky appears to be impersonal.
But the moon planet as it is personal, and the living entities on the moon planet are also personal. And sometimes Srila Prabhupada's statements on the moon confuses us. If you think about it, you know, he made many statements that a lot of people have a lot of trouble wrapping their heads around. Because when we send little rockets and probers to the moon, it appears to be like a dark, dusty place. And the Bhagavatam says, no, you know, it is personal, there are living entities there, and so on and so forth. And the logic of the Bhagavatam is very simple on that count. We humans tend to think that only humans have, you know, thinking, feeling, willing, and a soul. I still remember when I was teaching at the University of Chicago, I had an administrative assistant whose father was an entomologist. Do you know what an entomologist is? People who study bugs. And he said, my father has the most exciting job ever. I said, what does he do? And he said, you know, he takes concrete and pours it down anthills. And then, you know, then he studies how ants make colonies, and he's been doing it all his life. I said, poor ants. And she got so upset with me. And I said, but they don't have souls. I said, no, of course they do. And it struck me that a lot of people think that animals or insects don't have souls. And, you know, just about 100 years back, universities like Oxford and Cambridge would not allow women to enroll and graduate with a degree. You know, we complain that India is regressive and women's rights are not there and this and that. Oxford and Cambridge universities, the top two universities on the planet, would not let women graduate. Right? The Prime Minister of India, Indira Gandhi, is said to have sat at the last bench just to attend some lectures. Right? Because women didn't have souls. So in some of the, you know, cultures around the world that has dominance in terms of how we perceive the world, there are ideas, strange ideas like, you know, women didn't have souls for a long time. Now they did. Animals don't have souls. You know, whatever they can deny a soul to, they will deny, because then you deny them rights. Because the moment you say this person has a soul, they have rights. Right. And only educated men had soul for a long time. And then somebody challenged that too. So essentially, the Bhagavatam doesn't accept that version. The Bhagavatam says that the universe is teeming with life. It's just that we don't notice it. Our definition of life is very narrow. It is based on this thing called deoxyribonucleic acid, DNA. And we see that anything that doesn't have DNA is not considered life. So right in this room as we speak, there are germs going around in this air which we cannot see. There are millions and billions of bacteria in our stomach, right? That is actually digesting the food we eat. And some of the acharyas from the Vaishnava lineage point out that within every person there are at least three layers of soul. The first layer is the Jivatman. The second layer is the Anu Atman. Anu means all these living entities who are depending on you. The bacteria, you know, the protozoa, there are, so if you've drank contaminated water, there are amoebas too. They're all there in our body. And we think we are eating, but actually they are eating. And so there is Anuatma, there is the Jivatma who presides over everything, and then there is the Paramatma, the Lord, as the indwelling monitor. So that whole system has come together to give us this experience of consciousness, where we get thoughts from our within, we get ideas, our conscience tells us something. That is the Paramatman. And the Jivatman is like an emperor. The emperor at the end of the day is another living entity. Within a kingdom, the emperor also falls sick, like all of his subjects. But he gets to sit on the throne and think, this is my kingdom. Similarly, a living entity gets to sit on the throne and think, this is my body. But actually, it is being run by Paramatman and all these Anuatmans, including the cells that are actually making the experience of this body possible. And the Bhagavatam explains that, you know, as I said, the universe is teeming with life. It's just forms of life that we cannot grapple with our minds. And so if there is sun, if this body on this planet is made out of 70% fluid and 30% water, why is it improbable that bodies on the sun is going to be made of fire? And as the Vedas explain, bodies on the moon are going to be made of soma. Soma. Right? Ethereal bodies. So, if this is not true, then this vast universe is a massive waste of real estate. Think about it. It's such a wide, big universe, and we think we are the only ones? That's stupid. It's just, you know, think about it just logically. Right? If we think we are the only ones, it's not logic, it's not sense, it is just ego. And this is also what Prabhupada points out here, that, you know, things like lamentation, misery, and illusion is a nature of being here. This is the nature of this place. Right? And illusion is, we are the only ones. And this is why Srila Prabhupada kind of dives very deep into the metaphor of the moon and says that at the end of the day, the moon is independent. The moon rays are separate from the moon, like living entities are separate from the Lord. The Lord is independent. And I'll finish with one little thought exercise. You ready for a little thought exercise? From Jiva Goswami. That explains the relation between the moon and moon rays as well as the Lord and living entities. But this time it is through grammar. How many of you love grammar classes in school? It wasn't my favorite. But this is what Jiva Goswami explains. That in any language, you will have at least two kinds of sounds. Ready for this? You will have two kinds of sounds. Vowels and consonants. You know this? Vowels or consonants? What is a consonant and what is a vowel? A vowel is a sound you can utter with your mouth without any part of your mouth touching another. What are the vowels in English? A, E, I, O, U. Five vowels. When you uttered those vowels, did any part of your mouth touch another? That's why it's a vowel. In Sanskrit, it is called swara. Swara means a vowel. Now let's try uttering a consonant. Any consonant, T. You see the tongue touching the top? P. You see the lips touching each other? So when one part of mouth touches another, it is called vyanjana. Vyanjana. But Mahaprabhu, after coming back from Gaya, he was teaching grammar and he lost interest in this. Except if grammar was somehow connected with the names of the Lord, he would teach it. And Jiva Goswami later wrote a book on this system called Hari Nama Amrita Vyakarana. Vyakarana means grammar. So Hari Nama Amrita Vyakarana. And in this Harinamamrita Vyakarana, Jiva Goswami says, swara, vowels, let's make it Sarveshwara. Sarva Ishvara means the Lord of everything. Swara is boring, Sarveshwara is juicy. And Vyanjana, he said, let's make it Vishnujana. So vowels became Sarveshwara and consonants became Vishnujana. And here is the fun, okay? Here is the fun part. Vowels can exist by themselves, but in every consonant there will be a vowel hidden. Think about it. If you say a P, there is an E there. If you say an F, there is an E there. Right? If you say a Y, there is an A and an I there. Right? Similarly, Lord, who is Sarveshwara, is independent and can exist by himself, like the moon. Whereas living entities are like consonants. Within every living entity, there is a vowel embedded in it, just as the Lord is embedded within a living entity. This is how Jiva Goswami uses simple principles of grammar like vowels and consonants to explain that, you know, the Lord can be independent and also be there within you at the same time. But you cannot ever become the Lord, just as consonants cannot become the vowel. And what is the mother of all consonants and vowels? The first sound a human being can utter is a. A. Okay? And the last sound a human being can utter is when your lips close, silence. It's also considered a sound. So, a to silence is om, which is the seed of all sounds, therefore considered the Gayatri and the Lord Himself. So Krishna says, I am Akshara, I am A, and Krishna says, I am Pranava, I am Om. Right? The first sound and the sound that contains everything is the Pranava, Lord. And therefore every mantra begins with Om. Right? But then Om splits itself into Swara and Vyanjana. Swara is the Lord Himself, but Vyanjana are the living entities and the planet. And just as every vowel enters every consonant to make the consonants alive, the Lord enters this world through His expanded manifestations as the living entities to make this creation happen. So I'll stop here. I thank you very much for patiently hearing. And again, my apologies. There was some traffic and I was, you know, it took me 15 minutes longer to get here. But we can open the floor for any questions, comments, thoughts, ideas, corrections.
Thank you, Prabhu, for finally coming. And also that presentation of Jiva Goswami's grammar lesson. Thank you. There's a sentence in the purport, maybe the third last sentence, where Prabhupada says, one should not, therefore, accept the reflection of the moon on the water as actual and misunderstand the whole situation through monistic philosophy. Why does he say monistic philosophy? How would that?
Because this is a gloss on the first verse of the Bhagavatam. Janmadhyasyatahan vayad itaratascha artheshu avigyasvara tene brahmarida adikavai muhyanti yat suraya tejo vari vridam yatha vinimaya yatra tri sarga. Here's the thing. The Bhagavatam is the Lord Himself, and therefore both the Lord and the Bhagavatam is Uttama Shloka. Uttama Shloka is a compound which means one who is glorified by beautiful poetry. Uttama Shloka also means great poetry. Right? It's a pun. So, Yatra Tri Sarga Yamrisha, you can divide that word in two ways. Mrisha or Amrisha, it means, as you know, it comes out to be the same. Yatra Tri Sarga Yamrisha, Yatra Tri Sarga Yamrisha. When you do sandhi in Sanskrit, Tri Sarga Mrisha and Tri Sarga Amrisha. Amrisha means, you know, the difference is whether it's real and unreal, it is both at the same time. And in the translation, Srila Prabhupada points out the world is unreal, but Vishwanath Chakravarti points out the world is real. So our acharyas explain both. However, when we only accept it's unreal, then it is monistic philosophy. So to see the reflection of the moon in water and think it to be unreal is monistic philosophy. So what is temporary is not necessarily unreal. It is temporary. And because the material world expands as the energy of the Lord, we Vaishnavas accept it as real. And this is a very old question in Vedanta. In Vedanta, they pose a question that, you know, if you're in a dark room and you trip on a rope and you think it is a snake, does the snake exist? The snake is not there, but you think it is a snake. It is your illusion. And then they say that, you know, this material world is an illusion, but we think it is real. And that is Advaita Vedanta. Vaishnava Vedanta says that the material world is factually real. It's just it is temporary. That it is in a constant change of, you know, constant flux. And the only difference between the material and the transcendental world is that the substratum of this material world is time. Right? And Bhaktivinoda Thakur explains the material world is made of these two things, time and space. Space has gunas. Time is material energy without the gunas. Right? So gunas happen in time, but time doesn't have gunas. Does that make sense? Advaita.
Oh, it's Advaita.
Advaita. Duo in two. Duo in English is two, right? Duolingo, right? Dua. Dua in Sanskrit is duo in English. Dvaita is two-ness. Advaita is non-two-ness or oneness monism.
Okay. Thank you.
You're welcome. Hare Krishna.
Hare Om.
Yes, Prabhu.
I'm still a little bit unsure about Mataji. I think she asked a very good question. How does it connect, this idea of misunderstand the whole situation from monistic philosophy? Mm. One should not therefore accept the reflection of the moon on the water as actual and misunderstand the whole situation through monistic philosophy. But ironically, we hear that as you were pointing out, the first verse of the Bhagavatam says that even great demigods think the world is real, but actually it's unreal. That's a wonderful topic. I've been thinking about that for many years. Is the world real? Is it not real? And there's many angles of vision, especially two main angles of vision. But the thing is that in this purport, it seems like the confusion is to think that the reflection on the moon of the water is real. But then also in the Bhagavatam, it's saying that it's actually unreal. So, I'm having a little trouble combining the first verse of the Bhagavatam with these words in the purport. And we shouldn't understand the whole thing through monistic philosophy. So we're implying that the monistic philosophy confuses everything because it only stresses the unreality of the world and doesn't recognize a sense in which the world is real. Is that what you were going with then?
I think what, in my understanding, when Prabhupada says, accept the reflection of the moon on the water as actual, right, and misunderstand the whole situation, one way that would make sense is to think that the reflection on the moon is the moon. Is the thing, whereas it is only a reflection, it is not the, you know, not the substance. The quivering quality of the moon, and that's the explanation I think in the next sentence, is also variable. That you know, if you see that the moon is quivering, does the moon ever quiver? No. But does the moon appear to quiver when it is being reflected on unstable water? Yes. So does the living entity ever get affected by Maya? You know, yes and no, in that sense. It's a very long topic and we can go so deep into it and spend years talking about it. Right? But essentially, when we either totally deny the material world or the reflection in the water, in this purport, or we think that this is the substance, this is the thing, then you know, either of those are erroneous views.
What?
Erroneous. You know, if we think that the moon on erroneous.
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 If we think that the moon on the reflection is the actual moon, that is erroneous. If we think that the moon quivers, it is erroneous. But if we understand, oh, this is a reflection, right? The rays are getting reflected back, then that is correct understanding.
One just last little comment, P.S., is that, I'm just going to see if you agree with this idea, is that when we have to preach or try to explain Vedic Vaishnava Siddhanta to people who, which are so many, Mayavadis and personalists in general, then it's better to stress and emphasize the sense in which the world is real. Following Madhvacharya, we're supposed to say the world is real. On the other hand, if we're preaching to what we somewhat disparagingly call karmis or materialistic people, for them it's a good to give them a little wake-up call about the sense in which this whole world, as the Bhagavatam points out at the beginning, is unreal. It's to help them become detached. So different strokes for different folks.
Absolutely.
Does that make sense to you?
Absolutely. But we are also followers of Mahaprabhu. And we follow his examples with Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya and with Prakashananda Saraswati. He first kept quiet and heard their point of view and then he explained it. He gave them, Mahaprabhu gave the utmost respect to Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya and Prakashananda Saraswati. Right? He was never disparaging towards anybody. So I think that's a great example to follow. Yes, Munipur.
There's also different gradations of the meaning to unreal.
Yes.
English word, I mean, I got pulled something up here. So strange as to appear imaginary, not seeming real. I remember I brought this conversation up in prep school, and I said to the teacher who was a really impersonalist, oh, Prabhupada says this, it's something about, it's not that the world isn't real, you know, and I knocked on the desk, it's just that it's unreal. And then the pothead at the back of the class says, yeah, I can get that. This world is unreal, man. So there's different meanings to unreal.
Yeah. Also a very simple, if you think about it, a scientific explanation, just to reflect on your point, Sitadipu. You know, if you go by atomic theory, every atom is 99% empty space. And 0.1% or 1% energy. Scientifically speaking, it's 99% empty space and 1% energy. So right now, as I'm sitting on this chair, technically it's 99% empty space sitting on 99% empty space. But I have the experience that I am sitting here, which is a play of energy. Right. So, yes, please.
I was looking at the another angle. The difference between monist and us, because we are depending on Guru Parampara, they turn our face from this Jadal Jale Chandramasa Tampadistat Kuta Guna. This is the verse, today's verse. They say, this is real or unreal, turn, see the moon up in the sky.
Yes.
So then it makes sense it is real.
Yes.
And unreal, both. But if somebody don't turn my face towards the real moon on the sky, this will never end, this discussion. Is it real or unreal?
You nailed it, Guru. Everything I spoke over 1 hour, you gave in one sentence. Thank you. Okay. Are we out of time? Thank you. Okay, any final questions or comments or thoughts or realizations? The elephant in
the dark.
Elephant in the dark? Oh, the blind people trying to see the elephant? Is that what you're talking about? So it is said, and it's a folk story, it comes appears first time I think in the Jataka tales. But five blind people try to figure out what an elephant looks like. And each one and go hold, you know, touches only one part of it. Somebody holds the leg and says an elephant is like a pillar. And somebody holds the stomach and says an elephant is like a big sack of potatoes. And somebody holds the ears and says the elephant is like, you know, like a very thick banana leaf. And so each of them are correct, but none of them are fully correct. Is that what you were? Is that the...
It's like if you touch the tail,
like a snake.
Or if you touch the
trunk.
Yeah.
Same concept.
Yes. Thank you so much, Guru.
Thank you.
It's 9 o'clock. She goes with the world.